And thanks for choosing Free Will and listening to Radio Freethinker on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. I'm your host, Elon Dubrovsky, and with me, as always, is my distinguished panel, starting with Rob.
Hey.
Don.
Hello.
Ethan.
Hey, everybody.
And we have a special guest panelist today, Nick.
Hi.
Nick's in bioinformatics, and he's going to be telling us, he's going to be contributing to our conversation later. But first, I think Ethan's got something to tell us about something that happened today.
Well, that's right. In 966, on April 14th, was the baptism of Poland. And what that is the Christianization of Poland. And that started with the baptism of Poland's first official ruler, Mieszko I. And, of course, he did this to centralize his power and, you know, unite the people, and it worked.
Is this a forced baptism?
No, I think he did this willfully.
How exactly did they dunk Poland under the water, or was that...
I think it rained.
It rained, yeah. It rained. And by the 13th century, Poland was predominantly Roman Catholic, and it is today. In fact, 89% of the population of Poland is Roman Catholic, and so if you're Roman Catholic in Poland, you thank this guy.
I can attest to this personally, as I'm Polish and I was raised Roman Catholic, and technically I still am, because you can't not be a Catholic once you've been baptized.
Oh.
It's one of the rules of Catholicism.
Well, hopefully no one will light a match in the radio station so that we won't be baptized from the fire.
Moving on.
So today we've got a cool show. We're going to talk about morality in the Bible, starting with talking about the Passover story, continuing from what we were talking about last week. But first, we're going to talk about some stuff going on in Texas regarding evolution. And I guess Ethan is going to tell us what's going on.
Right. So you guys have heard of Texas, right? It's a state in the U.S. of A. Anyway, the State Board of Education...
very good barbecues there.
Yeah, the State Board of Education is voting on science standards for the textbooks. And, you know, why is this important, textbooks? Well, Texas is a very big state. And textbook manufacturers or publishers, it's cheaper for them to produce one textbook based on what Texas does. Because it's such a big state, they can just sell it to other states and saves them time and money. Unfortunately, the Texas State Board of Education is packed with creationists. And they're trying to get strengths and weaknesses, that's in quotation marks, put around evolution. And obviously this is a very...
So you're talking about in the science textbooks for high school students?
Yeah, high school students will have strengths and weaknesses, quotation marks, about evolution.
These are like scientifically proven strengths and weaknesses of evolution?
No, they're lies. They're creationist lies.
Oh.
I remember hearing something about people putting stickers into evolutionary textbooks saying something like, this is only a theory and you don't have to believe in it if you're a religious person or something like that.
Yeah, this is sort of related. The sticker thing happened, I believe, about 10 years ago. They took that away. And now they're voting to try to get something like that back in. This is actually...
Now they won't even need a sticker. The textbook's going to say right
inside
of it.
Exactly, yes.
Well, it's really, I mean, it's a death by a thousand cuts, right? I mean, they sit there and they say, well, you know, there's some controversy over it. One of the other things I think they've done, too, in the Texas textbooks is made the universe ageless. It no longer has an age. So when teachers sit there and they want to say the universe is 14 billion years old, that's no longer something they have to say. If you're a young Earth creationist, you can validly say in a science class, you know, it could be 14 billion, could be 6,000 years. We don't know.
Yeah, I recall seeing this news story about this, how like Texas actually passed legislature on saying that the universe is now ageless. So what else are they trying to do?
Well, you know, the disappointing thing is this is actually basically a defeat for science, because evolution did not get the strengths and weaknesses wording in there. But like you said, the Big Bang Theory did. Several other theories about DNA and other sort of well-established scientific theories did. So this is actually harming science considerably, and it's going to put Texas students and possibly more American students on a big disadvantage compared to their equivalents around the world.
I was actually listening to an NPR article about that just the other day, and they had a guy who phoned up, and he says, you know, well, okay, so they don't mention specifically evolution in the textbooks, right? I mean, what's that going to do for my health, or what's it going to do for my gas management in everyday life? Does it really matter?
Well, I mean, for
for gas mileage, for instance, it's one of those things that a hot topic of research at the moment is trying to find these organisms that can convert cellulose into biofuels with a reasonable degree of efficiency. And the only reason that there are these organisms in the first place is that evolution has been happening over millions of years, and organisms have been adapting to live in weird, strange environments where they might produce these useful, or what turn out to be useful now, processes for us.
That was our special guest, Nick, for listeners who just tuned in and missed the intro. Sorry to interrupt.
And so evolution does have a very direct impact on our lives.
So I guess basically we've told you now what's going on in Texas. After the break, we're going to now discuss what exactly is evolution. I guess we've been talking about it for a few episodes now. What is evolution? Why do we know that this is true? And like, why is it important to our lives? So stay tuned for that after this station ID, which Daniel's going to take us to right now.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there. Astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
It's one small step for man.
So vote.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
On May 12, 2009, British Columbians will again be voting on whether to adopt the new voting system recommended by the BC Citizens Assembly on Electoral Reform, BCSTV. BCSTV is a more representative system in which elected representatives accurately reflect and are accountable to the will of voters. If you're interested in helping the campaign to bring fairer voting to BC, you can email us at fairvoteubc@gmail.com or visit the campaign website for more information at stv.ca. A message from the UBC Fair Vote Club.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Freethinker, CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. And we're talking about evolution. We've now found out that they're going to try to teach their students in Texas that there's weaknesses to the theory. So let's figure out what is this theory. So we've got our biology expert here, Nick, to tell us. Well, Nick, what is evolution?
Well, I guess a very broad definition might be that it's the change in the makeup of the genetic material of a population of organisms over time or over generations. And evolution by means of natural selection, which is sort of the one talked about by Darwin, is really a very fundamental part of biology. It's sort of a unifying principle of modern biology as we know it. And it's natural selection is where favorable heritable traits become more common in progressive populations because they organisms which have those traits reproduce more.
So I found that basically, like, the evolution could be broken down into Darwin's three postulates. So it's basically, he proposed that the population of a species can expand infinitely, except the resources aren't infinite, so there's going to be a struggle for existence among all individuals in a species. So there's that. Then there's the idea that the organisms vary in their physical qualities. So basically, some are going to be able to reproduce more successfully than others, and then these variations are inherited by parents. So this inheritability passes on. So
they're not inherited by the parents, they're inherited by the offspring.
Oh, good one.
Backwards evolution. Time travel.
It's a hot new theory, backwards evolution.
Lysenkism coming in. So you were talking about evolution and all that, right? And some of the mechanisms, right? So does all evolution work the same way? So I mean I hear that some creationists will argue that there isn't evolutions argue amongst themselves. So, I mean, like, what about punctuated equilibrium versus steady-state evolution?
Right. Well, to a certain extent, the way that the critics of evolution use punctuated equilibrium...
What's a punctuated equilibrium?
I'm not an expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, but it's, I guess, kind of the idea that rate of evolution sort of is most of the time species are not evolving very quickly at all, and then there are these
maybe I can jump in here. Sorry, Nick, just to because I mentioned punctuated equilibrium. Steady state equilibrium is where small changes occur over millions and millions and millions of years. Punctuated equilibrium is like a volcano explodes, suddenly you have an isolated population with a new food supply, and how quickly can it change to adapt to that new? And instead of taking millions of years, sometimes it can happen in hundreds or thousands of years.
Right, and we know that for like in artificial selection, for instance, can produce very dramatic changes in a very small number of generations. And so it's really not a threat to the theory of evolution the way that the creationists try and make it out to be.
So both punctuated and steady state theories of evolution accept the fact that evolution does in fact happen. They just vary
on how
much time it takes and how it happens.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe in this case, we should talk about... So we have this theory. Like, why do we know that it's true? It's not as if, like, Robert Darwin... No, it's not his name. Charles Darwin said this idea, and everyone's like, that's amazing. That's the new way we're going to know how life exists. Like, there's a lot of evidence behind evolution. So maybe I could throw out a couple of things I found, like, sort of reasons why we know that evolution is what happened, how species sort of evolved to what they are today. So... I guess the main evidence is like fossil evidence. So the fact that we found transitionary fossils, which what that means is sort of like a fossil that's like part one species and part another species. So it's clearly like from a stage in their development where they were, you know, evolving in between. So like a really famous one is Archaeopteryx, which was a fossil which is like part reptile and part bird. And the neat thing about Archaeopteryx actually is it was found in a really cool like scientific way. Like it's not as if they just found it and then retrofitted it. Like, they actually, using the theory of evolution, they figured out, you know, what time period, which basically tells them how deep to dig, and, like, in what area of the world we should expect to find this fossil. Then they went and looked for it, and they found it.
So, basically, they didn't go looking for this particular fossil. They knew it had to exist, because there had to be something between reptiles and birds. And they knew, okay, it has to be around this time frame, so let's dig, and, you know, how they dig. They look at layers of dirt. So they knew whereabouts to dig, and they were able to find it. It made a testable prediction.
That's
about
the scientific
the
method at work.
So all this creationist talk about people not being able to find the missing link and not having any transitionary evidence is just hokum.
A funny quote is they say that there's gaps in the fossil record. So basically they're saying maybe you found some transitional fossils, but you haven't found all of them. So therefore, you know, that it probably didn't happen. But really, when you think about it, anytime you find a transitional fossil, you've created two new gaps in the fossil record, one on each side, because you're not going to get every single creature from like the first one up until like a billion years down the road when they became, you know, whatever they became. So, okay, that's...
Actually, another good example, if someone looks up scientific method being used to find gaps in the thing, is whales. If anyone does any research onto the evolution of whales, which is unique because it was a land animal that went back to the sea, and again, scientists say, well, we expect this evolutionary change to have occurred. And they go in and they can find the evolutionary evidence, the fossilized evidence. But, I mean, there are what do they call, micro-evolutionary examples we could use, too, that we don't have to rely on the fossil records. I mean, something like the banana, which has changed, evolved
which we've
immensely
discussed on previous episodes, if you guys want to go back to the first one.
The atheist's nightmare.
Yeah, the banana's a great example. There's also dogs,
pigeons.
Yeah, that was a big thing in Darwin's time.
Or antibiotic resistance in bacteria.
Oh, right, that's a really good example.
That might actually matter to me. Wow, evolution can be important to everyone.
Right, I guess that's another reason why we brought Nick along. Nick, you're studying, you know, bioinformatics. Like, is it important to us that we realize that evolution is true, or is it not really that important? Like, why should we teach our high school students that this is a real theory?
Well, it is very fundamental to pretty much all of biology. Like, it's hard to imagine doing any kind of genetics or medicine or anything like that without the theory of evolution, or any kind of modern medicine. It's applicable beyond just biology, too. Daniel Dennett has written quite persuasively on evolution as what he calls the universal acid, where it he says evolution eats through just about every traditional concept and leaves in its wake a revolutionized worldview. So it's one of the most important concepts in the last.
Yeah, I guess we're going to get, in the next section, we're going to talk about evolutionary psychology to explain sort of, like, why people are moral. And yeah, so there's lots of different ways that evolution can be applied to, like, our world. I guess Daniel's telling us that we have to go to a commercial, which is too bad because I had so much more evidence about evolution. But look it up. Commercial!
UBC AMS Mini School seeks to provide students and the community an opportunity to learn outside the classroom. Our courses are taught by professional instructors and delivered at the best rates around, starting at $45.
Check this out!
We provide a diverse array of courses, including, but not limited to, pole dancing, photography, guitar, swing dancing, wine tasting, and much, much more. Courses begin in October, February, and May, and typically run for 4 to 6 weeks. Check out www.ams.bc.ca/minischool for registration information.
Turn up loud! Turn up!
Hello, welcome back to Radio Freethinker, CITR 101.9 in
Vancouver.
So now we're going to talk about morality. So last week we talked about the Passover story and like whether it actually happened. So we'll go over that story to talk about now from a moral standpoint. But first, here's a cool clip from the West Wing, which talks about morality from the Bible.
Oh, sir. Good. I like your show. I like how you call homosexuality an abomination.
I don't say homosexuality is an abomination, Mr. President. The Bible does.
Yes, it does. Leviticus
18:22.
Chapter and verse. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions while I had you here. I'm interested in selling my youngest daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. She's a Georgetown sophomore, speaks fluent Italian, always cleared the table when it was her turn. What would a good price for her be? While thinking about that, can I ask another? My chief of staff, Leo McGarry, insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2. Clearly says he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself, or is it okay to call the police? Here's one that's really important, because we've got a lot of sports fans in this town. Touching the skin of a dead pig makes one unclean, Leviticus 11:7. If they promise to wear gloves, can the Washington Redskins still play football? Can Notre Dame? Can West Point? Does the whole town really have to be together to stone my brother John for planting different crops side by side? Can I burn my mother in a small family gathering for wearing garments made from two different threads? Think about those questions, would you? One last thing. While you may be mistaking this for your monthly meeting of the ignorant tight-ass club, in this building, when the president stands, nobody sits.
So that's the thoughts of Martin Sheen's character in The West Wing. So, okay, let's get right to it. This Passover story we talked about last week. So basically, here's the story. The Israelites are slaves in Egypt. The Egyptians are jerks. And like my people, I was born Jewish. We're slaves. It's no fun. I learned about this in school. We were told all about it.
Work. We're schlepping big stones to make the pyramids all day. We never get tired.
I hope he stops soon. So we were slaves. So God decided he was going to help us out, to got Moses to lead us out. So basically, he told Moses, go ask Pharaoh to lead us out. And then God goes to ask Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, or actually, we don't know what Pharaoh would have said, because it says in the Bible that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. So basically, he convinced Pharaoh to say no, because he wanted to unleash this awesome array of 10 plagues. And these plagues get like really, like it starts with bloody water, which is probably kind of inconvenient. And then there's like frogs falling, which is also kind of inconvenient. And then it gets a little worse with sort of all the animals dying. And then it gets sort of a little better because it just turns dark for a day. But then it ends with all the firstborn children being murdered. And that was God's way of freeing us. So like, even if we know that the story of Passover didn't actually happen, which is what we talked about last week, you know, there's lots of fables that we tell our kids that we know aren't true, like things like the boy who cried wolf or whatever. But do you think it's like moral to even tell our kids this fable, basically saying that the best way to solve, well, in my opinion, it seems like we're saying the best way to resolve an issue is to threaten death. But anyway, what do you guys think?
Well, it is kind of strange that God is supposed to be an all-loving and all-good being, but it's okay to commit genocide against a certain race of people. And not just a race of people, the most innocent group of people, the young children.
Right. I guess, like, there's other cases of genocide. Here, God's focused specifically on the children that were being born, I guess, or all firstborn sons, but including babies who didn't do anything. Maybe they would have been very against slavery.
Which, of course, leads to the age-old question that, you know, is something moral because it's wrong, or is it moral because God says you can do it?
Or is it moral for some other reason?
So basically, like, I guess the main question, like, the Passover story is sort of a vehicle to get into this discussion of, like, people say, a lot of people, religious people specifically, say that sort of they get their morals from the Bible, and they wonder, like, where does an atheist or someone who doesn't believe in God, where do they get their morals?
People quoting the Ten Commandments, even the point of having the Ten Commandments in every U.S. courtroom.
Or even the fact that some people say that the Bible is the best source of moral education amongst anything else. Even if you don't believe in God, the Bible is the rock stone of all morality.
So maybe I could tell another fun Bible story, and then maybe also you guys could share your favorites. Here's a favorite of mine. So there was this guy named Lot, and he was living in a city called Sodom, and apparently it was like a really bad city, and he was like the only good person in the city, so God decided he was going to destroy the city, which in itself isn't so nice, but whatever. It was a city of bad people. And so then God sent some angels to tell Lot that, you know, you better get out of the city because we're going to destroy it. But then the bad people in the city came to Lot's house and told him that they basically wanted to rape the angels. And so Lot said, don't do that. Here, take my daughters. They've never slept with a man, so you should rape them instead. And remember, Lot is the good guy in the city. So that's another sort of Bible story that makes you think, like, oh, this is where we're supposed to be getting our morals. This is what our kids are being taught in Sunday school.
Don't rape the angels. Rape my daughters.
Well, no, and you get the other things, too. I mean, some of the moral commandments. I mean, we all hear about the crazy religious groups who stand out in front of gay funerals or whatever, right, saying God hates fags, right? How come they never stand out in front of a Red Lobster? Because, I mean, the same place where it says sleeping with a man is wrong, it says you shouldn't eat shellfish.
Yeah, it uses
either
the same word, an abomination.
Which I think goes to what Rob was saying here, that maybe there's something more going on here. Maybe one of the reasons for this big Passover story was just to sit there and say, listen, we've got the hot, new, cool religion in town. Look what our God can do. Why don't you join us? And it's not really a moral tale, but a power trip.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of really weird morals and commandments set down in the Bible. This guy called A.A. Jacobs, who is the editor of Esquire, he wrote a book about this called The Year of Living Biblically. He went through a couple of different Bibles and wrote down every single moral idea, commandment he could find, and tried to live as fundamentally as possible for one whole year. This includes things like you should grow out your beard and not trim the edges, because that's ungodly, not mixing wool with linen, as was mentioned in that West Wing clip. He actually had to go and find someone who would make clothing that didn't have more than one kind of fabric in it.
Sounds like
and he actually had to remove a few of the commandments from the ones he was trying to live by, such as thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, as he figured that going around killing magicians might possibly be illegal. But,
right.
I mean, you know, the idea is that there are a lot of really sort of unstable moral lessons in the Bible.
Because I guess the bottom line is the book was written by people from a more primitive time, and sort of our morality has evolved.
Isn't it interesting, though, how people often cherry-pick the rules they want to out of the Bible, and they'll say, you know, these are the rules you should live by. And then we'll say, well, what about Lot? They're like, oh, that was written a long time ago. It's a story. Don't take it literally. But everything else, stuff that we like, take literally.
Which are the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and all that stuff. Actually, in the Bible, immediately after Moses jots those down on his tablets and brings them down, he smashes them on the ground in anger at seeing some people dancing around a statue, then goes up to God and gets new Ten Commandments, a revised, better set.
Rob, they weren't just dancing around a statue. They were dancing naked around a golden calf.
Yeah, but it was a hot day out.
Happened to those dancers?
God killed them. 3,000 of them.
There were 3,000 naked people dancing?
Yeah, it was quite a party.
God kills a lot of people.
We actually Daniel found a really funny website, which we'll post on our show notes, called Dwindling in Unbelief, How Many Has God Killed? And sort of goes through the Bible and show it lists all the people who God killed, and there's quite a few. The cumulative total at the end is 2,301,427.
And we're talking things like, there's one here that's, and God smote the Ethiopians. All of them?
Well, it says 1,000,000 Ethiopians, so 1,000,000 Ethiopians. That was harsh. I wasn't there.
Were there 1,000,000 Ethiopians?
Well, we're not talking about historical accuracy. We talked about that last week. So I guess to finish off this topic, if we don't get our morals from the Bible, where do we get our morals?
I think that's a good thing. I think Ethan over there was bringing it up, right? I mean, really, you know, one of the sources of morals must be ourselves, because when people, someone's telling me there's like 33,000 sects of Christianity. So every one of them has somehow made a personal moral decision which part of the Bible they're going to believe. It wasn't God's word so much. It was just their decision
their
on what they're going to take from
what
it.
Parts they like.
And that also goes to the authorship of the Bible, right? I mean, it's a God's word, but I mean, scholars have gone through it. And you've mentioned it's written by a bunch of people over a period of time.
So I found a really good quote from an article by this guy, Jeff Schweitzer, talking about where morality originated. And basically, this is sort of the generally accepted theory from evolutionary psychology, which is just a branch of evolutionary study where we're talking about how did the brain evolve and sort of the way we think, which, you know, our brains evolve just like our bodies and our eyes and everything else. So here's a really good quote, which I think sums it up pretty well. Traits that we view as moral are deeply embedded in the human psyche. Honesty, fidelity, trustworthiness, kindness to others, and reciprocity are probably primeval characteristics that helped our ancestors survive. In a world of dangerous predators, early man could likely thrive only in cooperative groups. Good behavior would almost certainly strengthen the tribal bonds that were essential to survival. We can reasonably postulate that what we now call morality is really a suite of behaviors favored by natural selection in an animal weak alone but strong in numbers. Morality is our biological destiny, not a gift from God.
That's very astute.
Yeah. You know. And, you know, biblical morality, the Bible is just the motivation, the justification, and the absolution for atrocities committed by people, you know, over the past 1,000 years.
Well, I remember having a conversation with a friend a while ago about slavery and how, you know, in antebellum southern United States, you know, the churches were saying slavery was right, and they were quoting scripture to show that Jesus said, be good to your slaves. Slaves are okay, you know, it's just be nice to them on Sunday.
This isn't to say that people that take their morality, you know, just because you're Christian doesn't mean you're immoral. If you're a fundamentalist Christian and you're a biblical literalist, chances are you're going to be more immoral than, you know, even a Christian moderate.
Or at the worst, you could be a hypocrite.
I think that's more what...
We're all hypocrites.
I guess we're going to be getting some emails, which, by the way, email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
We promise to read almost every email you send us.
The thing is, I wouldn't say... Like, when you say hypocrites, it's just like, you may think that you're getting your morals from the Bible, but clearly there's some things from the Bible that you disregard, so you must have your morals from somewhere else, even if you don't want to believe so.
You're picking what you want to be your morals and ignoring the things you find objectionable.
And what you want to be your morals arises... Morality arises from processes in the brain, which evolved. So, I mean, this evolutionary psychology tries to explain how that happened. And when you go through the Bible and you think, well, that seems right and that seems wrong, I'm going to pick and choose the ones you want. That's not based in whether you think it's the Word of God or not. It's based in something that's happening inside your brain and how you're reasoning about what you see in the world.
And also the stuff happening outside your culture, the place that you live, the people that you're hanging out with. I think one of the advantages of atheism is that it's morally flexible. It's not tied down to these strict rules and regulations as written in a book. And so as we learn more about ourselves and around us, we can adapt our morals to fit the circumstances.
Yeah, I guess the term that Richard Dawkins used was the moral zeitgeist, which is always pushing forward. But I guess, wow, look at the time, 4:30 already. I'll bet all of you listeners to CITR are really excited for sports. So we'll have to wrap this up. So I guess thanks again for listening to another episode of Radio Freethinker. Again, email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And bye from me, Elon.
From Don, eyes on, brains open.
From Rob, good night.
Oh, and I guess we have a quote also, but Ethan, you want to say goodbye first?
Okay, goodbye.
Who's going to read the quote, guys?
Nick, why don't you read the quote for us?
I think someone else should read the quote.
Okay.
This is a quote from The Simpsons by Superintendent Chalmers.
You have to say it in his voice.
I'll try. Thank the Lord. Thank the Lord.
That sounded like a prayer. A prayer in public school. God has no place in these walls, just like facts have no place in organized religion.
Thank you.
Well said.
All right, then.
So, leading into sports, the Vancouver Canucks are in the playoffs now. Okay, I guess I can't do that. Okay, bye, everybody. Thanks for listening. Next week. Listen next week.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Duh.
Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips. Yeah.
And up next, we got a little bit of heat hit for you. A heat hit. I have no idea what that is. But this is from the Mixdown.
You're now listening
to CITR
101.9 FM Vancouver.